From the Next Tier studio of WISR, I'm Pat Parker reporting. Get more local news on our website, butlerradio.com, and now on Alexa devices with the Butler Radio News Skill.
And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Malarkey.
Well, good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you back with us on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn. A Wednesday that really feels very much like a Friday. And people around the radio station here seem to be in a Friday mode, right? We have the long holiday weekend coming up. Most folks are off tomorrow. A lot of folks are taking Friday off as a vacation day. And around these parts, anyway, a lot of folks take Monday off, too. Because Monday's the first day of deer season here in Pennsylvania. So, super long holiday weekend, the longest one of the year. And a lot of traffic, as you might well imagine. In fact, I noticed yesterday, I was in the supermarket. Man, the place was packed. Yeah, people were getting ready for Thanksgiving, even though it was still a couple of days away. Open talk on the first portion of the program today. Phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. We have guests later. We're going to be talking with the folks from the cast and production staff of the Butler Little Theater Show that opens this weekend, Friday night. It's a comedy farce entitled Boeing, like the aircraft manufacturer Boeing 747, okay? And I understand it's a French farce, originally written in French, so we'll find out about that. It's not a new show. It goes back to the 60s, I think. Little Theater's never done it before. We'll have guests with us to talk about that. And also on the program today, we're going to be talking with the writer David Laszlo Konheim, who's written a novel. It's a quasi-historical novel about Native American Indians, Comanches in particular, about a woman who was captured by the Comanches and then was forcibly taken away and lost her family. She had a family when she was with the Comanches. So it's kind of an interesting twist on the old story of, you know, trying to rescue someone who's been captured, taken prisoner, kidnapped by Native American Indians. This is just the opposite. This woman wants to find her way back. So it's an interesting story. Comanche Captive is the name of the novel, and we'll be talking with the author a little bit later on the program today. But it's open talk to begin with, 283-2525. By the way, we will have an It's Your Turn program tomorrow. We'll not have live guests, of course, Thanksgiving afternoon, but it will be a best of It's Your Turn tomorrow. We'll take another listen to some of our more interesting interviews over the past several months. So we will have a program tomorrow, and we'll have an abbreviated program on Friday as well, talking about the upcoming holiday tour of homes that's been sponsored for, oh gosh, I don't know how many years, 30 years anyway, I would guess, by the Butler Symphony Association. But it'll be an abbreviated edition of It's Your Turn because we have Penguin Hockey on Friday afternoon, as the Penguins will be facing off at 1 o'clock, and we'll have that game for you. So that's the lineup over the next couple of days for It's Your Turn here on WISR. Thanks to Tyler Friel and Kayla Molzan for filling in for me while I was on vacation the past several days. Open talk to begin with, what to make of this incredible flurry of accusations of sexual harassment and sexual assault by men. here in the United States. It's an unprecedented thing, is it not? I don't recall anything like it ever before. I haven't heard any bombshells yet today, but that's pretty rare in the past couple of weeks because it seems like every day there's some new bombshell. The biggest one this week, it had to be the biggest one this week. Charlie Rose. Charlie Rose, of all people. Maybe you've seen him on PBS. Maybe you've seen him on CBS. He's been working with both, not anymore. And he also, I think he had a semi-regular stint on 60 Minutes, didn't he? Didn't he do occasional segments on 60 Minutes, those 20-minute segments? I think so. Well, he's gone. He's gone in the blink of an eye, fired by both PBS, Public Broadcasting System, and by CBS, his other employer. Senator Al Franken, a liberal stalwart Democratic senator from Minnesota. A couple of separate incidents that he's been accused of. And the list goes on and on. It is a nonpartisan phenomenon, folks. It's not just Democrats and it's not just Republicans. But it has all happened in just, it's like a firestorm over the past 3 weeks or so. Started with Harvey Weinstein. And then it's like opened up the floodgates. It's unbelievable. Have you ever heard anything like it before? I certainly haven't. No. And what to make of it, I don't know. And of course we have the senatorial candidate down in Alabama, Roy Moore, Judge Roy Moore. What a piece of work that guy is. Kicked off not once but twice from the Alabama Supreme Court, forcibly removed from the high court for not enforcing laws. One of them was gay marriage law, once that had been approved by the U.S. Supreme Court. The other one was the Ten Commandments, I think, on a public building. He refused to have them removed. Ousted twice. And now running for Senate and now accused by, I think the last count I saw was 9 women of sexual indiscretions, harassment, some cases assault. And the guy is still running neck and neck with his Democratic opponent in Alabama. And President Trump came out yesterday and all but endorsed Roy Moore. In so many words, he did. He said, you can't vote for the Democrat. Can't vote for the Democrat. Kellyanne Conway did the same thing earlier this week. It's an amazing turn of events. And Trump, of course, himself, accused by numerous women of sexual harassment and groping. And actually, it goes further than that with Trump. He actually admitted to it. In fact, he bragged about it in that Hollywood Access tape last fall, a year ago. So it's not just accusations with him. He admitted it. And if you go back through the years, again, this is, it's not a Republican issue. It's not a Democratic issue. It cuts across all political lines. You had Bill Clinton, the previous president. There are some people now who are suggesting that he should have resigned back when he was in the process of being impeached for the Monica Lewinsky affair. And there had been numerous others or other accusations before that. I thought at the time that Bill Clinton was a scumbag, and still do. In fact, I railed against him way back then, back in the 90s. People seem to say, okay, no problem. People said the same thing last year with Trump. Okay. Admitted groper. No problem. It's a strange time that we live in right now. A very strange time. Phone number is 283-2525, 283-2525. And then there's the whole situation of how depending on who you are and what you do for a living, you get treated differently. Charlie Rose, accusations came out against him one morning. He was done by that afternoon. He was done. He was toast. Roy Moore lingers on. Hal Franken lingers on. Franken has admitted it and apologized. Are there different degrees to this behavior? Yes. You know, they range from out-and-out rape, forcible rape, to inappropriate touching, or sexual innuendo verbally to women. I don't know whether this ever happens the other way around or not. I certainly haven't heard of it. I suppose it's possible with women in power. If a woman is a CEO or a president or a boss or whatever, shift boss, maybe they do it too. I don't know. But it's very strange. It's very sad, isn't it? It's very sad. Yeah. Is it a new thing? I'm afraid not. I think it's probably been around for centuries. Somebody said this week, it's so sad that all this is coming out. I disagree. I think it's terrific that it's all coming out. Otherwise, I mean, what's the alternative? We keep pushing it under the rug and nobody knows, nobody cares. I think it's high time that all of this information is made public. And does it get pretty graphic at times? Yes, it does. It certainly did with Charlie Rose. You know, there were none of these vague, he did this and this kind of that, molesting. No. Parading around in the nude in front of women. It's shockingly almost unbelievable. But I think it's good that it's reported so graphically. I mean, if that's what he's being accused of, then let's know about it. Let's not be vague and so on and so forth. What do you think? 283-2525. Are you sad about this? I hope you are. Sad that it's happening. Not sad that it's being reported. Not sad that it's being coming out in public. At least I don't think so. 283-25. If we're ever going to end it, we better start talking about it. We better get an idea of just how widespread it is. 283-2525, our number, open talk today. Let's get to the people. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn. Hello. 283-2525, our number. 283-2525. Open talk on the It's Your Turn program today. And kind of a disconnection there. Let's try this line. Hi, this is Dave Mullarkey. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
And Richard Nixon walked around the Oval Office totally nude.
I didn't know that. Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
That was on a special that was on TV here not long ago.
I don't know what it is with men in power. You know, John F. Kennedy accused of multiple sexual indiscretions. He was quite the philanderer, if the reports that we read about are true.
And I think that at that time, Marilyn Monroe was a willing participant.
Very true. Some have said that about Monica Lewinsky, but Bill Clinton was president. She was an intern, for goodness sakes.
Absolutely.
There's quite the power differential there. I don't know how consensual that could be.
Yeah, not only the power, but the age difference. That's with this fellow down in Alabama. He was in his 30s. The girls were in their teens.
He called one girl when she was in her high school trigonometry class.
That's what she said.
He called her high school.
Ask her out on a date.
He reportedly was banned from some mall down there because it was well known that he was out there scoping out young girls.
Exactly.
Unbelievable.
And yet, according to the current White House, the difference is that our president and Mr. Moore down in Alabama have repudiated the claims. They said that those things never happened. Those women are all lying. of course, you know.
How can Trump say that with a straight face? He admitted it. It's on tape.
Yeah, but it was just locker room talk. Don't you know that?
And by the way, you know, Dwight Eisenhower had a mistress when he was the Supreme Allied Commander in Europe during World War II.
Right.
Her name was Kay something. I can't remember.
Right.
Her last name now, but I don't know what it is with these guys.
I kind of understand that there are men, like you said, who are in places of power, positions of power, who maybe they're away from their. And Dwight Eisenhower, for example, he was away. He was in Europe. Mamie was back here in the U.S. And, you know, you might have a, well, I can't think of the correct what I want to say, but.
I hear what you're talking about, but it's just, you know, being faithful to your marriage vows. Franklin Delano Roosevelt was another one.
Oh, yeah.
Was not faithful to Eleanor Roosevelt. I don't know where these guys think, okay, now I'm president of the United States, I can do whatever I want with women. It's just disgusting to me.
Well, of course, we know that sort of thing goes on on a daily basis anywhere in the U.S. You know, it's happening right here in Butler, and these people are not in power. You know, they're not they're just the people next door.
That's true.
So, you know, it can happen. Charlie Rose, I definitely thought he was above reproach. I had all the confidence in the world in whatever he was reporting on, and I still have that confidence, but his person, it's so unfortunate that these, especially people in high places, our president, any past president, people of Al Franken, and of course that was before he was in the Senate, but at the same time.
Great role models, huh?
Isn't that a shame? Isn't that just a shame?
Thanks for the call, my friend. Good to talk with you today. Bye-bye. 283-2525 is our number. It's Open Talk, 283-2525. Caller, thanks for your patience. I know you've been waiting a while. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
I'm sorry. Thank you for letting me on.
Sure.
I have a question for you, and then I have a comment. The question is, when the previous mayor or the previous city council sets up something and goes along with whatever it is, change for your city, how does the new mayor come in and undo all of that, the city council? I don't understand, you know, there's story in Slippery Rock about what's going on up there, and then we're going to be facing it here in Butler. The new mayor is going to come in, and he's going to do this, this, and this. And I don't understand, if the old mayor couldn't do it, how can you do it? Money-wise.
Well, anytime there's a change in political leadership or political representative, you can, if you're a state lawmaker, you can undo what earlier state lawmakers did. Donald Trump.
I'm talking about on city council right here in Butler and in Slippery Rock.
Well, it doesn't matter. They're elected representatives. It's the same principle.
Well, I understand that, but I still don't see how, you know, whether it was for improvement or I read in the, I can't remember where I heard it at, but they're going to put the police chief back down behind their desk in the city with this new mayor. He's going to try to figure out how to do that. Stuff like that. It's just like, why would you undo that? I don't know. And then I have a comment as far as what goes on with these perverts, as I call them. I don't care if it's Charlie Rose or President Clinton. We have that in our own courthouse. Shame on Judge Doar. You know, family man, everybody looked up to him, and look at him. He's not any different than they are. So, all right, thank you for your time, and thank you for letting me share my grievances.
That's what we do here.
Have a good holiday. Thank you.
And you. 283-2525 is the number, 283-2525. Getting back to the first portion of her comment, any time you have a newly elected representative, I'm trying to think of an example. Prohibition here in the United States back in the 1920s. Congress enacted prohibition. Alcohol was illegal here in the United States. You couldn't make it, you couldn't drink it, you couldn't possess it. But then newly elected state members of Congress came in and changed it. I mean, that happens all the time. Donald Trump is now undoing a lot of the EPA regulations that were enacted under the Obama administration. Well, you get a new administration, newly elected officials. You can always change a law. 283-2525, our number. It's Open Talk. Hi there, caller. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Good afternoon, Dave. How are you today?
Just great. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you. Well, first of all, I'd like to wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
And the same to you, too. It's a favorite holiday for a lot of people, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I'd like to make a couple comments of what you have been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
As far as politicians, you know, getting caught having, you know, sex with women, that, you know, that's been going on for years. And in my mind, I feel that most of them are doing it. I'd say at least 75% or more, they just have not got caught. And it goes in sports, actors, around your home, your town, people that are in the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, you know, coaches for baseball, football, you know, all those things.
But don't you think I see your point, and I agree that it's, you know, it happens in all walks of life. In fact, one of the things that I worry about with all of this publicity for media types and elected politicians, what about the poor women who are working in a retail store or in a grocery store or, you know, at a factory, and they're being harassed by a supervisor or a boss? We never hear about them. You better believe that it goes on in those sorts of situations too. But that's not sexy enough to make the national news, you know.
Right, and if you take a survey of women that are out working, I bet you most of them have had that experience.
Mm-hmm. Now, but I do think that you have to, and there have been some great opinion pieces over the last few days, and the syndicated columnists. Kathleen Parker is one that I've started to read faithfully. I really like her even-handed approach. At least it seems even-handed to me. There is a distinction that you have to make here. I mean, you may disagree with someone who is unfaithful to his marriage vows. I mentioned Eisenhower or FDR, Kennedy, whatever. But, you know, a mutual consensual relationship among adults is a different story. You may find it morally objectionable. You may disagree with it. You may say, I would never do that. But, you know, that's different than groping somebody or sexually assaulting them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so I think you have to discern the difference here. I mean, if somebody forcibly rapes somebody, that's a heck of a lot different than, you know, a touch or a whispered innuendo or something like that.
Yes. And my opinion is, I hear it so much lately, it's like, I don't know, maybe I shouldn't say this, but I think, who cares? I think the politicians out there, if they're a good politician, they're doing their work, yeah, who cares?
Do you feel that way? Do you find yourself feeling that way?
Yeah, I don't care.
Do you think that...
There's lots of them doing that you don't even know.
Do you think that having someone who's morally fit is better served to be an elected representative than someone who is morally unfit?
Not always necessarily.
Well, we've certainly seen it in the past. You don't have to go back any more than 40 or 50 years here in the history of the United States to see that all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about in our highly elected officials, you know, president, Congress,
right.
So on and so forth.
Right. So as long as they are not doing, like, killing somebody, or I mean, that's a little bit different, but...
Well, but by the same token, if a woman feels pressured to do this, that, you know, she's going to lose her job, and she really needs her job...
Right.
You know, that is killing them, you know? I mean, from her point of view, I'm sure.
True. That is true. It's mentally, you know, harmful, somewhat physically.
They feel like they have to submit. What are they going to do? You know?
But that's why they can do it, because they put the fear into you.
Well, I find that absolutely repulsive, you know? I
mean, sure.
I couldn't stand for that for a second, you know? Well, gosh, interesting discussion. Hey, I don't claim to have all the answers here. And this is one of those things where, just like so much in life, it's not an easy black and white thing. You know, there are some gray areas in there.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate you adding to our discussion today. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. You have a good day.
And happy Thanksgiving to you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 283-2525 is our number. She made a lot of good points, didn't she? Hi there, caller. Thanks for waiting. This is Dave. Go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
I totally disagree with that lady. I take it she has never been sexually abused or groped or, you know, anything that, like, goes around. And, you know, with so many people coming out now, a lot of people say, well, why didn't they report it back in the day? I've heard that, you know, happening also. But back in the day, like in the 50s and 60s, that was taboo. You don't talk about anything like that. And for them to come out now, I think it's great that they're coming out, because, I mean, I could not believe when she said, what does it matter, you know, if a person, a highly respectable person does this, but yet they're doing their job good? I just couldn't believe it. It's like, you have never been molested. You've never been, you know, groped or anything. And it does. It lingers your whole life long. And I just when I heard her, I had to get on, because I experienced it, and personally, and you know, it's something that you don't forget, and mentally, it's with you the rest of your life.
Well, I know in the case of Bill Clinton, I can never get past his philandering. I mean, he may have done some good things. The economy was robust when he was president, but every time I see the guy's face, that's the first thing I think of.
Exactly.
You know, Monica Lewinsky, and I'm sorry, but that's the way it is. I just think he's a scumbag. I thought that back then, and I still do.
Right. Exactly. And anyone that touches a woman like that is, to me, is. I'm sorry to say that, but that's, you know, how I feel. They have no right to you know, put their hands on a person unless they have their okay.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right about up until very recently, we put this under the rug. We put it in the closet. We didn't talk about it.
Exactly.
How sad. Thank you, my friend.
You know, another person I'm really surprised hasn't come out yet is about Joe Biden. You know, all of his pictures, if there was girls there or ladies, he had his hands all over the people, you know, getting pictures taken. And I'm really surprised nothing's come out about him yet. But
I haven't seen those, and I'm very I'm very hesitant to you know, start speculating about people before there's any
accusation. Yes.
Because once you do that, you know, how do you take it back? So.
Yeah, it could start like a fire, trickling down.
Thanks, my friend. Good to talk with you today.
Thank you, and you have a good Thanksgiving.
And you too. Thanks.
Thank you.
We have time for one more call. Caller, you've got the last word today, so go right ahead. It's your turn.
Hello and happy Thanksgiving.
And the same to you.
I think the country, we're still behind times about this sex thing. And I'm really, I don't like the idea about what Moore did. I think he did do that. I know he did. I know there's some women that used their body and they were lying, and it's hard to tell who's lying and who's not. And but a lot of men these days, some have this attitude that God made man above women. He should put up and shut up. If I touch you this way and that way, accept it. You accepted me. This is the kind of attitudes of these men in leadership.
Well, some of them anyway.
Some of them. Only some of them. Very few of them.
Tell me this, because our time runs short here. If you lived in Alabama, would you vote for Roy Moore?
No, I would not.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, my
friend.
No,
I would not.
Thanks for adding to our conversation today. It was nice to have you on with us. Thank you. All righty, open talk time is gone. We'll have more. Fear not. That's one of the things we like to do as much as we can here on the program. Guest coming up, though, next. We're going to be talking about the show, Comedy Farce, that opens up day after tomorrow, Friday night, at the Butler Little Theater, live on stage. And still later on the program, novelist David Laszlo Kahnheim joins us to talk about, it's an interesting historical novel, if you like Native American Indian culture, specifically Comanche. I think you'd be interested. So all of that's still to come on It's Your Turn here on this Thanksgiving Eve. Stick around, we'll be back with more in just a couple of minutes.
Do you have missing teeth or wear dentures? You may have heard of or are considering dental implants. Hi, this is Dr. Bob Todd of Butler Smiles Dental Care. There are many options available with dental implants, and making the right choice can be confusing. I have been placing dental implants since 2004, both full-size traditional implants and small diameter or mini dental implants. There are indications for both, but more and more we are using mini dental implants in a variety of innovative ways. They are easier to place, causing less discomfort, are less costly, and can frequently be used immediately after placement, allowing you to get back to eating the foods you like or smiling again right away. Traditional implants typically have a 4-month healing time before they can be used. I invite you to call our office at 282-7774 to schedule a free consultation to see if mini dental implants are the right solution for your dental problems, or visit us on the web at butlersmiles.com.
Hey folks, have you heard about Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center? Yeah, they're located just off Newcastle Road, Shockey Lane, right behind King's and Villa Grande. Going Postal Butler. They package your items for shipping. And that takes care of a situation that sometimes can be a real bother. You know, you got to get the wrapping paper, the string, the tape, whatever you need. They'll do it for you. And you can ship any way you want to, FedEx, UPS, U.S. Postal Service. They will package your items for shipping at Going Postal Butler. Other services they offer, copying, scanning, faxing, mailbox rentals, custom boxes. They have an official notary, also greeting cards, even a lottery agent. Going Postal Butler, 140 Shockey Lane. That's just off Newcastle Road, right behind King's and Villa Grande restaurants. It's in the Shockey Mini Storage area. For more information, give them a call, 724-841-0044. Going Postal Butler, your friendly neighborhood shipping center. Welcome back, good friends. Good conversation on the open talk portion of our program today. We welcome guests from the upcoming production of the Butler Little Theater of the comedy farce Boeing Boeing, which opens up this weekend. Dennis and Nedra Casey are here. True disclaimer, both longtime friends of mine, so who knows where our conversation is going to go today. Dennis, Nedra, nice to have you here.
Nice to be here, Dave.
Nice to be here, Don.
Oh, my.
And right away he starts.
And by the way, nice to have you back. You folks are longtime residents of the Butler area. Veterans of the Butler Little Theater and the Musical Theater Guild, and then you moved down south for a while, for a few years, but now you're back home again.
Yes, we've been back after I retired. Our two children and five grandchildren you know, we couldn't convince them to move to North Carolina, so we came back to be with our family and friends in Butler.
Tell us a little bit about, first of all, this show is called Boeing. And as I said this morning on the news, you know, like the 747 Boeing, because people hear that word by itself and they say, What did he say? Boeing. It's Boeing like the aircraft, right?
Yes. Well, the play is a farce, a true farce. So it's unbelievable people placed in an unbelievable situation, and hilarity ensues. But the Boeing refers to the fact that there are three airline stewardesses all being dated. In fact, supposed fiancés of one man who ensconced himself in Paris, France. And he counts on the fact that these airline stewardesses all work for different airlines to keep them apart from each other and unbeknownst to each other. And when Boeing starts to produce faster, bigger jets, all of a sudden these three women that he's been able to keep apart, their paths start to cross and hilarity ensues.
I can see how that's a real setup for that, no question about it.
Yes.
You're the directing the show, right?
Yes, that's right, yeah.
And Nedra, you're in the show?
I am in the show. I am the French housekeeper who tries to keep all of Monsieur Bernard, who is the man who owns the apartment, all of his girls separate and cook special meals for them and so on and so on. And also into the mix, Bernard's friend Robert comes to pay him a visit. So he's an attractive young man, too. So the two of them get involved with these three women.
Oh, I see. Is this Bernard? Is that the guy who has the apartment? Is he like a self-styled playboy? Is that the deal?
He's a businessman. We don't know what business it is.
Mm-hmm. He's not really a playboy. He actually cares about each one of these women. But at the same time, he's confused. He can't make a choice. You know, he loves them all equally. He doesn't see himself as any kind of Lothario or anything like that. Mm-hmm. He's just confused about relationships.
Oh, aren't we all?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
So he's obviously well off, though, because he has a French maid.
Well,
he has it's like a Paris apartment or something? Is that?
It's a Paris apartment. It's kind of unusual because on our stage we have seven doors. So that adds to the hilarity, because people are going in and out of doors all the time, often missing each other by mere seconds.
Well, when you talk about sort of unbelievable people in unbelievable situations, I don't know how many apartments you've been in, but there really haven't been a lot of apartments I've ever been in where seven doors come off of one room. So hence the distinction between farce and comedy.
I was going to say, that's almost a definition of farce, though. You better have a bunch of doors that people keep going in and out of all the time.
And hopefully the actor's timing is good so that nobody is coming in the wrong door at the wrong time.
Do you have a cast list?
Yes, we do.
For example, the Bernard, who has the apartment, who's playing that part?
He's played by Casey Bowser, mm-hmm. who's very well known in the little theater stage. And his friend Robert is played by Philip Ball, who also is very well known in the Butler area. Our three stewardesses are very young women, new to the theater. Gloria is played by Carrie Peters. And Gabriella, who is the Italian stewardess, is played by Layla Tyler. And Gretchen, who is the German stewardess, is played by Hannah Wallach.
You're smiling when you say this. I'm guessing we got a bunch of accents going here with an Italian stewardess, a German stewardess, and an American stewardess.
And a French maid.
That's been a challenge for us all to get our accents down really well and not be influenced by the other accents on stage.
Mm-hmm. I was never very good at that. Any accent I tried, it came out Japanese.
Yeah. which is nice. Yeah.
I'm not sure.
If you're doing Pearl Harbor, that'd probably be useful. But
this show opens Friday. This Friday?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're pretty excited about it. You know, as a director, you go through 6 or 7 weeks of these rehearsals. It's It's the male version of giving birth, because, you know, it's all this anticipation and, frankly, pain that culminates when hits the boards on Friday night. But, you know, my work is pretty much over, and it's all in the hands of the actors now. And you know, God bless them. You know, I'm getting to the age where I'm not sure I could remember those lines, but they're wonderful. They're doing a great job, and I look forward to seeing it with an audience.
As long as I can remember, the Butler Little Theater has opened a new show on Thanksgiving weekend. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a tradition that goes back forever,
right?
Which is kind of nice, because a lot of folks have guests coming to town over the holiday, or maybe there's just after a big Thanksgiving meal. Okay, it's the next day. You're looking for something to do, yeah.
Well, so, if you're looking for some type of deep, introspective play that you're going to talk about later with your family and friends, this is not it. This play is one that you'll come in and hopefully be very entertained and giggling as you're walking out to your cars.
Boeing opens this Friday night at the Butler Little Theater, live on stage, of course, if you've never been there. They still take ticket reservations by phone, although I guess now a lot of people are they
doing
make their reservations
computer.
Online, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think percentage-wise it's gradually moved so that now percentage-wise most of the reservations do happen online, but we still fully service the telephonic reservations just as we've always done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were just saying last night, Casey and I were talking, and he said, you know, before we used to be able to just walk in the little office there and say, oh, how much of a crowd do we have for certain nights? Now it's all online, so we don't know. We can't tell.
Yes, I noticed the last time I was there, all of the ushers had iPads.
Yep.
I'm thinking,
what? The little theater is moving into the 21st century.
Well, it makes it nice, because to make a reservation by phone, and some people still do that,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, it's between 7 and 9 o'clock in the evening, because you've got to have a volunteer there in the box office answering the phone. But online, you can make a reservation at 2:30 in the morning if you want to.
In your pajamas.
Yeah, or your slippers.
In your slippers.
Yeah, well, given what's happening in the news, I don't think we should be talking about people doing stuff in their pajamas.
We should move.
Not a bad idea. Yeah. Boeing opens this Friday night. I want to take a break here, come back and talk a little bit. There's an interesting history to this play. And Nedra was telling me about this before we went on the air. It was written in French, right? And
yes,
originally produced in French, which
uh-huh.
seems kind of funny. We'll talk about that and some other stuff, too, when we return here on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR. We'll be back right after these words.
Whether you're a backyard car fixer-upper or an auto repair shop, Millich Auto Wrecking is still the place to go for new and used auto and truck parts. They have been for over 40 years. And compared to factory prices, you'll save big bucks. Millich Auto Wrecking is neatly organized and will tell you immediately if they have the part or not. Open Monday through Thursday, 9 to 5, it's Millich Auto Wrecking, Route 38, the Oneida Valley Road. Look for the big black and red sign. Stop by or call 287-1001. And yes, old Uncle Fred still goes to Millich.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there starts here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus. No car, no problem, the bus will get you there. Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
Classic Movies Guide, and check that out. Welcome back, good friends. If you're joining us a little bit late on this segment of It's Your Turn, that's just grand. The Caseys are here, Dennis and Nedra Casey. They are both involved. Dennis is the director of Boeing, the show that opens this Friday night, day after tomorrow, at the Butler Little Theater. And Nedra Casey, his wife, is a member of the cast. Nedra, you were telling me just before we went on the air that this show was originally written in French and produced in France, which seems strange because the title is American. Boeing. It's an American aircraft company.
Yes, it's amazing. And it you can see that it was translated because sometimes things don't make sense and we've had to change words just a little wee bit because they didn't make sense in what we were doing. But it's a hilarious show. And Dennis, my husband, being the hilarious person that he is, has even taken it to a higher level. If something's funny in the script, he says, oh, wait, we can make this even more funny. And he does, and
yeah,
we
I would
do.
Suggest that I didn't take it to a higher level. I took it to a lower level.
Yes,
I think
maybe that's it.
perhaps a better way to describe
the
it.
The show was originally produced in the early 60s. You have all the history here.
Mm-hmm. It was produced originally in 1962 in London, and then it was produced in 2007, and the last production was in 2008, and Christine Baranski played the part that I'm playing.
And it won the Tony on Broadway that year for Best Revival of a Play. So I think that's important to mention because, okay, this is a farce. I love a good farce every once in a while. It's just kind of like Rodney Dangerfield. I wouldn't want to watch one every night.
Right.
But once in a while, they're hilarious. This is a darn good show. It doesn't win the Tony for best revival of a play if it's not pretty good stuff.
Yeah, it is good stuff. And I call it classic farce because we alluded earlier to the seven doors. You know, you really can't have a good farce without multiple doors. Awkward, unbelievable situations and this isn't a Neil Simon comedy that often depends upon just exactly how clever the lines are. This is the type of comedy where you put sort of unbelievable people into an unbelievable situation and shake it up and see what comes out. It's pretty funny.
Kind of like maybe a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum, for example.
Why would you think of that,
Dave? I can't imagine. One of my favorite farces of all time. In fact, I start to get weepy just thinking about that show.
When for the audience members that don't know this, Dave and I were participants in a production of Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum in 19... Gosh, it was a long time ago.
It was a long time ago.
We were young then.
And yes, it's a classic farce with people running around for no apparent reason and hilarity ensues.
Now, there is... in my experience, at least, there's a difficulty in directing a farce because if the timing isn't there, it can very quickly go flat. Kind of like, you know, Jerry Seinfeld doing his stand-up but on an off night.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a good analogy, and you have to have talented people, and luckily we've got my wife, who she obviously slept with the director to get her part, but the other people are really good, so... it takes talented people to have that sense of timing. You can't, again, like a Neil Simon comedy where the lines themselves are so classically funny, anybody can say some of those words and get a good laugh. In this play, you have to have people with a great sense of timing to carry off a part like this, and the six people we have here are really doing a great job.
Boeing is the title, methinks, and I'm just going over the dates here, and this was produced in the early 60s, written in French. It would have been called, if it was written today, Airbus. Because answers my question about why a French guy would entitle his show Boeing. Well, this was... Airbus didn't exist back in the early 60s.
That's a new
aircraft.
And plus, let's face it, when you say the word Airbus, that's just not funny. When you say Boeing, that's funny. So, you know, it lends itself to that.
This show opens Friday, runs, is it still the typical running schedule?
Eight evenings. Seven evenings and a Sunday performance at 2:30. So it runs Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then the following week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say we mentioned the reservation system, telephonic and online, but you can buy walk-up tickets. I mean, you can get tickets at the door. Reservation's probably preferred because you're probably going to get a better seat if you get a reservation, but you're more than welcome to walk up to the ticket booth and get a ticket on the night or afternoon of a performance.
Well, there really aren't any bad seats at the Butler Little Theater. For folks who have never been there, and I always urge people to give it a try if you've never been there before, the furthest seat from the stage is seven rows back.
Exactly.
That's why it's called the Butler Little Theater, but it's very intimate. It reminds me, and you guys both worked at the old Silver Fox Theater up in St. Petersburg, a summer barn theater, now long gone, long, long gone. But that was the most intimate theater arrangement that I, not only were the, you're right next to the seats, but they were on all four sides of you.
I loved working up there. I regret the fact that that theater is gone, but gosh, that was a great place to play.
I went up to see, several years after it closed, I don't know, 15 years after it closed, I went up to see a show at the Sawmill Theater in Cook Forest. Mm-hmm. Now, they have a new theater now, but when they started out, it was literally in an old sawmill. And the seats were from the Silver Fox Theater.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, my. Isn't that interesting?
The seats awesome. And the whiteboard, which consisted of eight 303 cans of Golden Bantam corn and a couple of extension cords. I mean, that was the light board, but that was, they had taken that from the Silver Fox.
Fondly remember that place.
Yes. And the late Margot Pitts, who was the managing producer there for all the summer shows. I'm trying to think of other shows that were originally French. I can think of a couple. Tartuffe, of course, was French, very still done. And then there was a show that the Little Theater did, I want to say 8 or 10 years ago, Lepine et Gilles, is that, am I close, something like that?
Yes.
I have no idea what it translates to.
And La Ronde is another one.
Oh, yes, La Ronde, I forgot about that.
And then the one that our buddy Ken Schreffler starred in, The Invalid, about the hypochondriac.
Another one, yes.
Another French farce.
And I was in that one. Too,
also so. By Molière,
I played French maid in that also.
You've got that down.
Man.
I'm telling you. You're doing
typecasting here.
Why is our house so dusty when she's playing? I don't get that. We'll talk about that off air, I guess.
Well, just so you don't think that it's, you know, totally out of this world to have a play originally done in French to be a hit in the United States. Mm-hmm. Not so.
Yep.
Not so. Mark Camoletti was the
Which
author.
Does not sound French, does it?
French. Sounds like he would have written this in Florence somewhere.
Yes, you know? Yes, exactly.
Or Sicily or something like that. Boeing opens this Friday night at the Butler Little Theater. Had you heard about this show? Were you familiar with it whenever you signed on as director, Dennis Casey?
No, actually, I was drunk one afternoon at Gary Coller's house. And no, that's not quite right. But we were newly back in town, I was approached. It was at Gary Coller's birthday party, and asked if I was interested. I didn't know the script at all. They got me a copy of the script, and it's funny because, you know, when you read a script from a director's point of view, you immediately try and think of ways you can work with this particular script. I'm very intimately familiar with the Little Theater stage, and you're reading in the description at the beginning of the play that there's seven doors, and my first thought is, oh, well, I'm going to cut that down to five doors because there's not enough space on the Little Theater stage for seven doors. Well, then as you read through it, you realize, well, you can't get rid of two doors. You need all seven doors. So then it creates staging issues, opportunities, et cetera, to direct it. So that was kind of one of the reasons I agreed to direct it, was because it directing a farce is a challenge, and directing this farce because of the spacing and that kind of thing was interesting to me.
Were you familiar with it, Nedra, before?
No, I was not. Not at all.
I've not heard of it either.
No, he read it after they asked him to direct it, and he said, oh, I think there might be a part in it for you. And I said, oh, okay, I'll read it.
Well, you know, we worry about that now because there aren't as many parts for short, old, fat people as you'd think there should be, like in American theater. So audience members probably aren't going to be seeing a lot of me, except hanging around the lobby, you know, in a way that might get Roy Moore in trouble. But otherwise,
did you Did you do any community theater when you lived in North Carolina?
We got to work. This is another play that, they would remember that Ned and I worked on before. We got to work props on Death Trap, and you know, audience members that, know that play knows that the props in Death Trap are really sort of a unique challenge of their own. There's a lot of weapons, some of which have to work, and in a stage proppy kind of way.
And you had done those stage weapons before, and then we headed props down there. So
yeah, but that was the only play. We always had challenges between my job and traveling back up here for grandchildren's birthday parties and stuff. Made community theater down there more of a challenge. So, you know, who knows if this show goes well, they might ask me to direct something else.
I always find it challenging to read a show and decide whether, you know, how it's going to play. I mean, if it's a show that, you know, Odd Couple, okay, I don't need to read it. I could probably do most of it by heart, you know.
Yeah.
That's not spaghetti, that's linguine. but if it's a newer show, I can remember, I guess I must have been on the play reading committee or something at the little theater, and read 84 Charing Cross Road, which is an English play.
Yep.
And it's two people, and they write letters back and forth to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that is it. Mm-hmm. That's it. There's nothing else to it. And I thought, man, this would be the biggest bomb of all time. I wouldn't be able to stay awake through the first act.
Yeah.
One of the best shows I ever saw down there when they mounted it. One of the letter writers, the woman, was at a bookstore in 84 Charing Cross Road
in
London. And the guy was in America, I think. It was wonderfully done. So that's always a challenge for me. I'm never quite sure.
Well, one of the things that I find at the little theater is, you know, the play rating committee tries to pick shows that will not only entertain the audience but sort of broaden their horizon, if you will, in terms of if you come to the little theater over a 3 or 4 year period, you're going to be exposed to a lot of different shows. I mean, the little theater doesn't do a lot of farces, but obviously we're doing a farce this go round. We do your classic comedies. We do what I think are very high-end dramas. A lot of community theater groups don't even attempt to do good dramas. We'll do the occasional mystery. So a show like 84 Charing Cross Road, which is a very contained sort of compressed, if you will, thing, that's a show that the little theater will do that most community theaters wouldn't touch.
Well, the little theater's been going strong since early 1940s, I forget exactly
1941.
What. 41.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Even through the war.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
They never stopped producing shows. The latest, the one that opens day after tomorrow, is Boeing Boeing. If you are going, be prepared to laugh, the Caseys tell us. It's a comedy farce. Opens this Friday night, runs Saturday night. Sunday's the matinee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sunday
yes.
afternoon.
Yep.
And then, that's good because the Steelers play Sunday night.
Yeah.
Yes.
Against Green Bay.
Yes.
It's a night game. And then all next week, Tuesday through Saturday at the Butler Little Theater. A box office phone is 287-6781. Weekdays between 7 and 9 p.m. Or ticket reservations can be made online at any time, bltgroup.org. Nedra and Dennis Casey, good to see the two of you. Nice to have you here today.
Always
Thank
a pleasure,
you so
Dave.
Much, Dave.
Love you.
More to come on It's Your Turn. Hey, we're going to be talking about an interesting historical novel. If you're into Native American Indian culture, and I am somewhat, although I don't know much about Comanche culture. That's what we're going to be talking about next in just a couple of minutes with writer David Laszlo Konheim. So stick around. More to come on the Wednesday edition of It's Your Turn on WISR right after these messages. Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. I'd like to talk to you for just a moment here about the good folks at the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here at Butler. What a great job they do to help those who are less fortunate in many ways. They operate the St. Vincent de Paul Food Bank, of course. They have their St. Vincent de Paul Thrift Store in the Greater Butler Mart and their Client Aid Program. And the Client Aid Program helps needy families or individuals, you know, maybe with help on a heating bill or a rent payment at the end of the month, Client Aid. And that's funded through the operation of the thrift store. So you can help by donating items that you no longer need or want to the thrift store. It's very easy to do. drop-off bins are right inside the door. You can use the container outside. They're located in the Greater Butler Mart, just a few doors up from the Friedman store. So think about it next time you're cleaning the closet or the upstairs, instead of throwing that stuff away. Why not donate it to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler? We stand tallest when we stoop to help others. The Young Funeral Home of Butler invites you to stop by their Jefferson Street location downtown Butler to talk about pre-arrangements. Not the easiest thing to do, but necessary. And the Young family will walk you through the process, making it very comfortable and really easy to take care of. You'll experience peace of mind knowing that your wishes and plans will be carried out to the last detail. Call the Young Funeral Home in Butler today to make an appointment with a member of the Young family. Generations of the Young family have been caring for generations of Butler families for well over 40 years. The Young Funeral Home, West Jefferson Street in Butler. Welcome, listeners. Nice to have you with us on the It's Your Turn program today. My name is Dave Malarkey, and on this next segment, we're going to be talking about a pretty great historical novel that's just been published. It's called Comanche Captive. The author is D. Laszlo Konheim, David Laszlo Konheim, and he's our guest. David, nice to meet you. Terrific to have you with us here today.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
There's something about Native American Indian culture that has fascinated me since I was very young, probably 7, 8 years old when I first started to read, you know, other than Dick and Jane books. I'm sure that I'm in no way unique. I'm sure many people are fascinated by Native American culture, even though they may not have done a great deal of research there.
Yeah, well, I was enamored of the same sort of cultural iconography, perhaps, that you were from the classic Westerns on film and on television.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until later in life when I developed, a more engaged interest that I began to research the true history and found it very compelling. Found it so compelling, indeed, that whereas in the original concept for this book, the original concept was practically devoid of Native American characters, I decided to engage and inhabit them, sort of biting the bullet, as it were, because, of course, impersonating the other is full of pitfalls.
Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about the beginning plot outline of Comanche Captive, David.
Well, it tells the story of a rescued Indian captive, Laura Little, a white mother who was forced to leave behind her young son, born to the chief. She breaks out of a mental hospital and where she's been confined by her family, and meets Scott Renald, who's a famous captive hunter who has his own story of loss. A hostile tribe chases them westward. They're tracked by army agents. Columns of mounted cavalry are sweeping the area, and amidst it all, Renald discovers something. Indeed, he discovers that her story is tied to his story.
Hmm. Fascinating. This is a novel, but there are real people. I mean, there are some characters who were real. Can you tell us about some of those?
Well, my female hero is based loosely on a real-life Indian captive who spent 24 years with the Comanche and whose son became their last great chief. That was Quanah Parker, the chief. Cynthia Ann said goodbye. She didn't have a chance really to say goodbye. She was forcibly extracted from her family. Her husband was killed. Her boys she never saw again. She was able to leave with her girl, who died some years later, preceding her own death. And she lived a pretty miserable life after she was rescued. That's a very famous story, but there are other famous captive stories. People who, boys who grew into men, infants who grew into old age before they were discovered. One of the most famous captives was, and this is another story of true assimilation, was Herman Lehman, who was captured by the Apache as a boy, who became a warrior, who murdered, in self-defense, the shaman, the medicine man.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of escaping to white society, which would seem natural to us, he fled to the Comanche, not directly but indirectly. He lay low for a while and then joined the Comanche, who were highly skeptical of him at first, and was finally brought in by Quanah Parker, this son of Cynthia Ann, after he had become a very important, a very prominent reservation Indian. It's a fascinating story, very intricate.
The time frame is in the mid-19th century. I'm correct on that, David?
Yeah, my novel takes place in 1874. The Red River campaign of that year, in which thousands of mounted troops rounded up pretty much what was left of the Comanche and Kiowa that were holed up in the Palo Duro Canyon. I call it something else in my book. There were still some that remained, and of course the Indian Wars went on. But this was an extremely important date that signaled the end of an era for the Comanche.
The Comanches. I have limited knowledge. I know a little bit about the Comanche. Most of my early reading and my continued interest in Native American culture, you know, I'm from Western Pennsylvania, so it centers around the Algonquin, the Mohawk, and so on and so forth. I actually became fascinated by the Leather Stocking Tales, James Fenimore Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
I read them probably when I was too young to read them, I would imagine. But, the Deer Slayer, Natty Bumppo, Chingachgook, they're all in my mind. But that was Eastern, the Northeastern Native American Indians. Comanche were Plains Indians, correct? Am I correct on that?
Yeah, the Comanche began, actually. They splintered off from the Shoshone up in Wyoming, and they swept down into the southern plains, displacing other tribes. They were incredible mounted warriors. This was the key to their success in sort of in dominating what was later called a Comancheria, basically from Colorado to Mexico, from New Mexico to Kansas for centuries. They stopped Spanish expansion, they stopped Mexican expansion, they fought hard against, let's say, quote-unquote, our expansion. But it's important to note that they fought other tribes as well. They were as merciless to other Native Americans as they were to the Europeans.
Hmm.
Now, you mentioned the Mohawks, and that's interesting because this book is inspired in part by a famous Randolph Scott film called Comanche Station. And in it, you might recognize the Mohawks because for some reason, as great as that movie is, they're wearing Mohawks, the Comanche, that is.
So you had to do quite a bit of research on this, or were you somewhat knowledgeable already about the culture of the Comanche?
Well, as I said in the beginning, I was really reluctant to try to get inside Native American characters. That is a minefield for a writer such as me. But I found that as the project developed, as the story played out, it became necessary first to introduce the Tonkawa, then the Comanche. It wasn't just a matter of doing research. Of course, I read books, and I did a lot of work on the Internet, but I contacted the Comanche Nation. It wasn't easy. The door or doors didn't open automatically, but I wanted to make sure that, though I do take dramatic license, I must as a novelist, I got it right where it was important for me, especially important for me to get it right, concerning the language, certain aspects of the culture, and I got a lot of help that's acknowledged in the beginning of the book.
A little bit, listeners, about our guest, author David Laszlo Konheim. You're a native of Minnesota, Minneapolis, I believe. But my goodness gracious, David, you've traveled all over the world, have you not?
Well, I spent nearly 5 years in Prague and lived, this was in the 90s, and lived in during that time in Spain and Germany, but came back to Prague where I published a literary journal called the Prague Review, spelled the French way, and which we published for years after I left Europe. I moved back to Minnesota for a short time, met an Israeli, and we got married, and I moved to Israel, and I've been in Israel now 13 years.
So that makes it kind of interesting to try to determine which nationality you identify as a writer, or do you try to do that at all?
So that's a good question, and that's one that I ponder, not just for the purposes of, you know, answering that question in interviews, but throughout my life, I'm, you know, you can take the American out of America, but I'm American. My subject matter is American. My perspective is American. There is a kind of cultural expectation in Israel that the immigrant assimilates, that the immigrant becomes not somebody else, but meets the culture. And that's something I've never quite been able to figure out, the expectation that I become Israeli. I could extend that thought to the demographics. I mean, there are nearly 3 million immigrants from the former Soviet Union. There are nearly 2 million Arab Israelis, and on and on and on. So when you get down to it, the majority is other than the native culture. I mean, the native Jewish culture. And I have Palestinian friends. I have, in fact, from the very beginning, I made very close friendships with Arabs as well as Jews. And to me, it's a kind of bewildering place to be without a clear sense of identity. It asserts one, but that identity is the matter of much debate. Inter and intra religion.
Listeners,
Maybe some of that rubbed off on the book.
We have to take a quick break here. Fortunately, we have a few more minutes that we're able to chat with David Laszlo Konheim, and we'll pick up our conversation with him here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words. Hearing aids are a complex issue, but at the heart of it, we really want just a few simple things. We want to be able to hear well, to get personalized care, and all at a reasonable cost. Well, a simple chat with Hearing Services by Kelly, and you'll find that she stands above the rest. She's not going to sell you the highest price hearing aid just to make a sale. In fact, you'll save thousands of dollars because there isn't any overhead. With Kelly, you get experience and one-on-one personalized care that you don't get anywhere else. Call the hearing aid lady today. Phone number 724-756-4327. That's 724-756-4327. Her customers who made the change are so happy they did, and you will be too. 724-756-4327.
The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot has delicious, all-natural, free-roaming turkeys and chickens to make your holiday meal special. Their birds are handled with extreme care and are specifically fed non-GMO grain and are preservative and additive-free. Buy your turkey frozen today or get it fresh right before the big holiday meal. For the tastiest, highest quality turkey or chicken, call the Jones Turkey Farm, 724-352-2450, or visit them online at jonesturkeyfarm.com. The Jones Turkey Farm in Cabot, quite simply the best.
Does your pharmacy tell you your wait time for a prescription will take a half an hour or longer, or maybe won't even be ready until the next day? Don't think this is your only option. At Institute Hill Pharmacy, we have made it a priority to take care of our customers' needs first because your time is precious. Most wait times are under 10 minutes. So don't you think it's time to make a switch to Institute Hill Pharmacy, located at 937 East Jefferson Street, or find us on Facebook, Institute Hill Pharmacy, an old-fashioned pharmacy just the way you remember. Welcome back. I'm Dave Malarkey. Our guest is David Laszlo Konheim. And for the purposes of our conversation today, David is the author of a new novel called Comanche Captive. Did you get any cooperation from the Comanche Nation in the writing of your book or in the research that you had to do, David?
It was very important to me to capture the language. I didn't want anything, I didn't want any errors in either single words or in the construction of sentences. And there's just so much you can get from internet-based information. And there are some very, very minor or very limited translation services available for that. So I did reach out to them, and I did work very closely with a member of the tribe who recorded all the words I use in the book. There was one particular construction, She Rode West, the name of a character, which I had attempted to translate myself in the absence of help, and I was so relieved that just prior to my having to turn in the final draft of the book, they came to my aid. I'm very proud that, as far as I know, all of the Comanche is correct in the book, and that I did what I could to capture, as I said before, what was important to me to capture literally. Though I do concede that, as a novelist, taking liberties is my business. I'm an entertainer, after all.
Yes, that's true. You also put pidgin English into the mouths of most of your Native American Indian characters. This is kind of going against the flow in this day and age, is it not, David?
Well, I speak pidgin Hebrew. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. These characters were not school taught. So it would be inaccurate and to some degree, I think it's uncomfortable, let me use that word instead of one I was going to use, for my Native American characters to speak with some kind of noble cadence and sort of long form when attempting to speak in English. Now, one of the ways that I avoid using too much pidgin English is that I have they speak in their own language, but we read it in English, and then it's mm-hmm. full form and grammatical.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned that you mentioned Randolph Scott, and obviously it seems that films, Western films, have had perhaps more of an influence on you than books. Do you have any favorite Western? Let me tell you. One that if you're talking about a Western that deals with the Native American Indians, Little Big Man is very, very high on my list. I'm sure you're familiar with that film. Mm. Do you have any thoughts about it or comments on it?
Oh, it's been a long time since I've seen that. I must have been a child. I'm also kind of hazy on A Man Called Horse, but The Searchers is a great, you know, it's one of the classics of the era, and it's a film that I've seen many, many times. Let's see, The Stalking Moon, starring Gregory Peck, is another that made a big impression on me and on my book. Comanche Station, Randolph Scott's penultimate film, and the last time we see him riding his magnificent flaxen-maned horse, Stardust, was by far the most influential. That's a totally satisfying film about the rescue of a Comanche captive. And in its final moments, greatly uplifting. Yet when Scott swings Stardust around and rides off toward the horizon, we fans know it's for the last time. It's their last adventure. On some level, I just couldn't accept that. And so I envisioned another adventure for those two. My tall in the saddle hero is Scott Renaud. With the transposition, if that's a word, of the initials. And I turned the plot of Comanche Station on its head. And instead of rescuing a captive, my hero, as I described before, is sort of enlisted. He's convinced by the heroine to help her get back to lead her search for her son.
Yes, quite frankly, I've read several stories about Indian captives. It's almost always, you know, detailed search and rescue. Some of them are better than others. Some of them are longer than others. I don't know whether I've ever read one that has your plot line, where it's in fact just the opposite of that. It's not search and rescue at all.
I'm glad you pointed that out, and I'm waiting for somebody to correct me in making that same judgment, which I've made before numerous times, that I don't know of another book or movie. There may be, it's probably more likely that there's a book out there somewhere that is about a forcibly rescued captive trying, and I hesitate to say this, but succeeding at returning to her tribe. The Stalking Moon, which I mentioned before, the storyline does encompass what happens after the rescue, but it is not that story which I just described. And the mystery here is that we don't know. We see Laura Little mostly through Scott Renaud's eyes, so to some degree she remains a mystery to us. We don't know till the very end what her true motivations are. Is she attempting to rescue her son from the imminent sweep of the cavalry? Is she attempting to return to her tribe, to her husband? What are her true intentions? They are somewhat dubious.
Can you help us just a little bit on the timeline here? Not specific, but you mentioned that your novel is set in 1874. Are we near Custer at Little Bighorn? Are we near the end of the Indian Wars or no?
Yeah, in fact, we're just a couple years away from the Little Bighorn. But it's important to place the Southern Plains in their context, because the Comanche had come right up against Western expansion, because the fort system was quickly overrun by settlements. You had settlers coming face to face with people defending their lands and with people defending their buffalo herds, which was the source of everything to them. Not so for a time for the Apache, for the Sioux. I believe, I'm not, you know, an Apache expert. I'm researching the Apache for my next book. But we get into the 1880s before the Apache are fully brought in. And also the Sioux.
Fort Sill is mentioned in your book, Comanche Captive. Is that, in fact, a real military outpost, or was that a name that you made up?
Oh, absolutely. Fort Sill, which still exists today as a historic monument, was built, correct me if I'm wrong, by Buffalo soldiers, by, I believe it was the 10th Cavalry. Hmm. Somebody out there, if I'm incorrect, will correct me, and I'd be happy to be corrected if my memory fails there. But the Buffalo soldiers, There was the 9th and the 10th in that era, and they were based sometimes at Fort Sill, sometimes at Fort Concho. I believe they started out with Lieutenant Colonel Davidson at Fort, another fort, whose name escapes me at the moment. But they were prominent in the Indian Wars. I mean, the Buffalo soldiers were.
The popularity of Westerns, be it novels or films, is cyclical. There was a time, I know this from Turner Classic Movies, where, my goodness, there were films all over the place, Western films all over the place, with the biggest stars in them, too. Not just John Wayne, many, many others. Same with novels. It would seem to be a bit of a downtime now. Does that worry you, releasing a novel of this genre in today's day and age, David?
Well, Dave, here I am speaking to you. I have been both ecstatic, you can hear it in my voice, and very much surprised by the press interest in this book. I can tell you, my wife was highly skeptical. My in-laws were highly skeptical at what I was devoting years to. My own family was highly skeptical. But the editor who recommended Comanche Captive for publication is a mystery writer. She doesn't even read Westerns. Hmm. And one of the reviewers wrote that, a woman reviewer, you know, there was some skepticism that this would be a novel that would appeal to women, and that's a very important demographic to appeal to. She wrote that curling up on her couch with Comanche Captive made her want a box of popcorn and a soft drink to go with it. So I think at the end of the day, a good story is a good story. I believe I've written an engaging one, and one that is written responsibly, with respect for the facts, with respect for telling, with interweaving true history with fiction. And it, at the end of the day, it's a family drama. I've been hesitant to get into the details of the plot, but Laura and Scott share something very intimate that they're not aware of. And this is revealed in a series of reveals from the middle of the book, and it becomes something very different from the chase narrative that it starts as. And the culmination, the climax, is truly an explosion, but it is not the one that we anticipate. The book does not end, and I say this with a degree of hesitation because there are a lot of thrills and drama, and there's a great deal of action in the book, but it does not end in the traditional Western fashion, either with some kind of shootout on Main Street or with a huge battle between the cavalry and the Indian tribe. It's a much deeper and more personal book by that time, and the revelations and the climaxes are much more personal than they are, say, political or military.
One final question. We've got to let our guest go. There is a video that you narrated about the novel and the history behind it. Is this available to the general public or no, David?
Well, thanks so much, Dave, for mentioning that. I'm proud of that video. That's ancillary to the fiction project, and in it you'll see pictures of real-life captives and some pretty compelling illustrations, too, from the period and slightly after the period, by searching on YouTube simply Comanche Captive.
Again, listeners, that's the title, Comanche Captive by David Laszlo Konheim. It's an adventure novel, great depth, contemporary resonance, even though it's actually set back in 1874. David, nice to meet you today. Any other books in the pipeline? I thought I heard you mention earlier that there might be another one.
Yeah, this is a continuation of the story of Comanche Captive. I'll say no more about that at the time. I appreciate you asking about it, but we're a few years out, I think.
I see. Nice to have you with us today, David. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks so much, Dave.
Sure. So long.
Bye-bye.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 8888. The pick 3 is 771. The pick 4, 9634. The pick 5, 49929. Wild ball for each of those is 5. The treasure hunt is 8, 11, 18, 22, and 27. Estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Hi, this is Dave Malarkey. Ever have a tough time getting the motor started early in the morning? I know what you mean. Well, maybe I can help. I'd like to invite you to join me every weekday morning, Monday through Friday, for the Early Morning Show here on WISR. We start with the first local news of the day, bright and early at 5:30. We go to 9:30, and oh yes, we pause for half an hour and have coffee with Kate at 8:30 every weekday morning, too. Please join me. I'd like to share the early morning hours, 5:30 weekdays here on WISR. Thanks to our guests today, David Laszlo Konheim Dennis and Nedrick Casey, and a very spirited open talk program on the early portion of It's Your Turn today as well. Tomorrow, Thanksgiving Day, it'll be Best of It's Your Turn, a second listen to some of the